This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 1st of February, 2022. Quite a squeeze in the equity market into month end. Interesting to see if it was that timing, that end of month. And of course, if there's some rebalancing going on after a very brutal month prior to the last couple of sessions of the month, if that was the driver. And of course, we'll be finding out about that in coming days as we've rolled into a new month. But technically speaking, if we look at the U.S. market there, that 200-day moving average in the S&P 500, as you can see on slide two in today's slide deck, or pull up your chart, clearing that 200-day moving average, putting in focus perhaps the 100-day moving average, which was coinciding with some prior dips in the market. And then technically, Fibonacci traders looking at that 4580-ish level on the future for the next resistance level. To me, I don't see how we've cut the move in half really off the highs. Do we really blast higher to the new cycle highs? And we have quantitative tightening. We have a Fed that's on the rampage to tighten rates. I don't know, but those are the next resistance levels. But Peter, as we were talking about on the internal call, I mean, it was really remarkable. We're seeing all the stuff that was down the most showing a really high beta to this move. And so that stuff was gaining the most, especially yesterday. Anything else you wanted to pull out of yesterday's session?
No, you covered all of equities, so that's good.
Well, no. Why are you on the call then, Mr. Graham?
I'm joking, but you're right. I would say almost that talking about beta is almost relevant because, I mean, look at the moves on slide two. I mean, you had the bubble stocks basket up almost 10%. I mean, it's unbelievable move. And I think, as you said, I mean, Tesla was up 20% from the lows on Thursday or Wednesday last week. It's as I said in our internal call, to me, I mean, it's not unusual in post sharp sell off to have very sharp or very, you know, bouncy rebounds, if you will. It's very technical. It's very flow driven. I think there's just a lot of buying the dip. As you said, I mean, the underlying factors on dynamics, I still think that is skewing the risk to the downside versus the upside. So people should be really cautious. I have more comments on that when we get further into the podcast and some of my other slides, and we'll take that there. Okay. But I think one of the things that also is striking is that, you know, how small caps have been totally brooted. They came back yesterday. But I would really strike a voice of caution still. Don't take this as a big thing. The 200-day moving average, you have put in the S&P 500, but I've been in several client talks the past week, and it's very clear, at least from Saxo clients, which I think is a very good sample size of, you know, the ordinary retail investor. They all are looking at this 200-day moving average in the NASDAQ 100, and it sits just above the 15,000 level, so around 0.8% from the current levels. And they see that as a very critical point. So I wouldn't be surprised if we close above that, you know, potential more retail flow could push and the NASDAQ 100 even higher. But we will still have to say, you know, be cautious because the yield curve, the signals we're getting there, and the fiscal headwinds from the US, etc., all these things are still pointing potential to more downside risk in equities.
Yeah, and then meantime, on the interest rate front, one of the key things that has helped to at least open the window for a little bit of a squeeze here is the fact that those long yields have stayed tame and even retreated a bit. And Altea, it was great to have you back on the call today. And we're seeing this, and we've talked about it before, we're seeing this yield curve flattening continue in the U.S. The sort of the short-term Fed expectations still pinned near the highs for the cycle as we await further data, et cetera. But those long yields tamed a bit. Certainly something else going on in Europe, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But what is the Fed going to need to do to get this yield curve to stop flattening? It's not something that they don't want to invert the curve here, do they?
Well, absolutely. However, they didn't play the jolly in order to not to have the yield curve flattening further. And that jolly card is actually the balance sheet reduction, because if the Federal Reserve begin to run off its balance sheet, well, it will apply upwards pressure in the long part of the yield curve. But it was fairly clear last week that the Fed is looking to use interest rate hikes as the principal tool to tighten the economy. So that puts entirely upward pressure in the front part of the yield curve, and of course, long-term rates, because the Federal Reserve is more aggressive, they remain in check or even drop because there is concern regarding a slowdown in growth. And I'm going to take you, John, on slide number three. The spread between 10-year yields and 2-year yields dropped quite a lot, by 20 basis points, from 80 basis points to around 60. And that's a clear signal that the market is starting to believe that the Federal Reserve is running into a policy mistake.
From a policy mistake on the one side to a policy mistake on the other, in terms of shifting from dovish to hawkish. Very interesting as that shapes up. And actually more interesting, especially in relative terms to what is going on previously, is what's going on in European yields. And just for a little perspective on why Eurodollar was so bid yesterday, one of those reasons being that we're seeing EU yields picking up in a strong way at the front end of the curve. Finally, we saw a German CPI print yesterday for January, and that so-called EU harmonized number at printing above 5% again, 5.1%. That was after a significant drop to 4.3% from the prior 5.7% in December expected. And then the month-on-month data point there is 0.9. Surprising to the upside as well. And you see on slide four there, I put in the German Schatz yield, so the 2-year German government yield. You know, this has popped up to new highs since 2016, a significant move, to say the least, especially relative to the sort of moribund range it's been in for a long period of time. So we see that. And just for comparison, doing a yield spread analysis on the left side there, Eurodollar, the black line, and then the blue is the 2-year. So even that locally, we're seeing a big pickup there, because we saw U.S. yields steady. And then the red comparison is the 10-year, which has remained very much range-bound for many months, and almost a year now, actually, on the 10-year yield. So I think we're at a key inflection point here. Does the ECB crater this week? Does it show sort of a loosening commitment to its dovish guidance? Really critical ECB meeting for establishing that, and really critical on the Eurodollar chart to establish whether this break lower was a red herring and we're going to reverse back into the range. Or whether some of the rally also was merely risk sentiment supported. I think that's certainly a tailwind for the rally, but a really critical juncture here for our EU yields. And how do you pick this apart? I'll say, to what degree is this the Italian political situation sort of being put on ice for now with this Mattarella second term? And to what degree do you think it's the unseating of ECB expectations? And just what are you focusing on here in general and EU fixed income?
Well, John, I think that you brought up a very key point regarding this week ECB meeting, and it's that question: what is the ECB going to do? Is going to tilt a little bit hawkish or is going to remain neutral? And that's a very important question, because if the ECB remains neutral, then it's going to be sandwiched up between an aggressive Federal Reserve over the Atlantic and probably an aggressive Bank of England, which is going out with an interest rate decision also on Thursday. So what happens, the outcome of that is that European sovereign yields will need to rise anyway, especially because we know that bond yields are really much correlated to US Treasury yields. So if we see them rising, they will rise as well. And that's why yesterday we have seen bond yields breaking once again above 0%. But probably the biggest move that we are going to see, or more relevant move that we are going to see, is going to be on the gilt bund spread, which I put on slide number seven. And if that you can see that spread is already among the widest that we have seen since 2016, but there is the possibility that it would widen up again on Thursday if the ECB maintains a neutral stance and the Bank of England instead is aggressive, and that would show the divergence between the two central banks. So definitely, this is probably the most interesting spread that we should look at the moment. And regarding the Italian BTPs and the re-election of President Mattarella, well, John, I think that it's fair to say that there is going to be a little bit of a honeymoon in Italian BTPs for this week, maybe next week. And we have seen that spread, BTP bond spreads, are tightening a bit yesterday. But it's fair to say that after a short-lived honeymoon, Italian yields will need to rise together with the rest of European sovereign yields for the simple reason that they still carry a very high beta. So if there is volatility in European sovereigns, they will be affected as well.
All right. And then, of course, we had overnight, we had the Reserve Bank of Australia out with its rate decision. No rate decision expected, but it was important meeting for guidance. They were expected to stop their expansion of the balance sheet. So the QE taper completely down to zero. And that was, of course, delivered. But the guidance was surprisingly dovish. They want to use quote unquote patience in observing the levels of inflation and in particularly wage inflation, as they are still a bit skeptical to the degree to which this will be sustained and the degree to which it is affected by supply chain disruptions, et cetera. So given the time frame for when they expect inflation to be rising, they explicitly said, don't expect the fact that we've achieved tapering down to zero to mean that we're about to launch a series of rate hikes. This was dovish guidance. We saw quite an adjustment lower in those sort of near-term RBA expectations for the rate. And yet, if you look at something like Aussie dollar, I show it on slide 6 in a chart, it's just incredible. This morning, rising to new local highs relative to the last couple of days. Fundamentals are just tossed out the window when everything is about correlations with risk sentiment at the moment. But it is certainly something to observe here. This is a very dovish central bank relative to what is going on in some other key areas, especially with, of course, the Fed. So I'm a bit skeptical of the degree to which the Aussie can continue to rally unless we get some new drivers like Chinese sentiment or a wild new rise in key commodity prices together with a further recovery in risk sentiment. Okay, Peter, if you haven't gone to sleep yet listening to us, take us through where your focus is now after this very considerable rise over the last couple of days in equities. And as earnings season, as you said, this is the peak week for this earnings season.
Yeah, it is. And we've had on slide 8 stocks to watch. We have three companies here in Europe that has reported earnings. So we have UBS Group, the Swiss-based investment bank. They are beating on net income pretty significantly, and they're showing very strong cost management. It's very impressive. And they're also saying in their press release that client activity is higher here in the first quarter compared to Q4. I've put in the share price here on slide 8 so you can see it. I mean, it's we've highlighted that financial trading firms, investment banks, companies like UBS, we think are companies that are good to have in your portfolio during inflation and with everything that is going on. And I think so far that's proving to be the case. And I think the result today from UBS is bolstering our view on that. Novozymes is more in the industrial side, or so the material sector. I think it's a chemical, it's an enzyme manufacturer, and as you can see here, they're beating on revenue, but which is because of the big demand. But on their operating profit side, they're actually missing by 7 percentage points, and so they're really impacted by increasing cost pressures. And then I've put in Boozt, which is a Nordic oriented e-commerce within fashion. They're seeing revenue up 38% up on revenue, and they also beat on their operating profits. So they had a very strong December. And then I've highlighted bubble stocks, of course. You can find our bubble basket inside the trading platform under the research tab, and then under stocks, you can scroll down and you can find it. As I said, they were up almost 10%. So I mean, if we have a reversal on risk today, then obviously some of these names will be will be turning around again, of course.
Yeah. And then on the earnings overview slide, anything you want to pull out there?
Yeah, it's an important day for US earnings. So we have PayPal, massively important for the payments basket and the payments industry. There's recently been this, discussions inside, among investors that, PayPal is showing a sequential decline in their growth rate, and it has impacted a big payments company here in Europe called ADN, which trades in the Amsterdam Stock Exchange. So the key question is whether PayPal can sort of, lift the cloud, so to speak, from this overhang of concerns. UPS, massive, one of the biggest logistics firms in the world, they have seen their growth rate year on year coming down over the past 3 or 4 quarters, as tailwinds from the pandemic are easing. They're seeing cost pressures on wages and fuel costs. So it's very important to see, one is what's their outlook. So the consensus is looking for a less than 3% growth rate in Q1, which is very low given everything that's taking place in the world. And they're facing these rising costs. So can they keep their margins? I think there's a lot at stake today for UPS. And then AMD, it's really doing well the past couple of years. They're doing a lot of things on innovation. I think they're gaining a lot of ground on Intel. So let's have a look at that. And then Starbucks, of course, from the consumer side. And then ExxonMobil, should highlight that yesterday they announced a lot of streamlining of businesses ahead of their Q4 results. They are merging a couple of business lines. They want to cut costs. They're considering moving their headquarters to Houston. I think that's your hometown, I guess, John.
Great move.
Yeah, very great move. And then this engine number one activist group, I think they at least got 2 seats. I don't know whether they got the 3rd seat on ExxonMobil, but they also in the statement yesterday that ExxonMobil is moving in the direction of allocating more resources and investments towards different types of renewable energy projects. So it's again, it's a part of this massive effort by these oil and gas companies to, one, find a new future when eventually oil and gas will be a smaller business, but also, please the ESG crowd and regulators and governments around the world.
Yeah, just a reminder on that AMD stock, just a remarkable story from a company that was being, people were speculating on whether it would survive, trading sub $2 back in, I'm looking at a chart back in 2014 or so, and it's gone well above $100. Just a remarkable recovery there. Okay,
John, before you go to the macro, can I just quickly highlight why have I put in this chart on the quarterly net profit margin on slide 9? And what I want to show with this is that, look, I mean, for Q4 last year, so the profit margin is actually expanding by 0.5 percentage point for Nasdaq 100 companies. And it's down, it's rolling over for MSCI World and S&P 500. And I think it's one of those underlying trends you have to be aware of in terms of, gauging how much can technology sell off, because apparently they seem to be more immune to the input, the input cost pressures. So knock on wood, the key factor, of course, being will rising wage pressures in the US this year finally, begin to hit these technology companies, because they have a lot of humans on their in their operations.
Right. And as we look towards that, and we should look for something like prices paid in the ISM manufacturing report out today. It is a manufacturing PMI day over the world. And of course, in the US, that means the ISM. We're looking especially at, I think the anecdotal stuff will be interesting in this report, not just the numbers, but of course, we need to look at demand. So new orders, inventories after that massive inventory build in Q4 last year, and then prices paid. And then the JOLTS job openings, has that cooled a bit? This is December, though, so I think the January figure will be key there, as I'm suspecting the January has seen a lot of cooling off in the jobs market. And on that front, the non-farm payrolls change expectations for Friday are sub 200K. And I think that we could even be weaker than that on the report on this Omicron outbreak, et cetera, lack of services, jobs, hiring, and so on. So we'll watch that. We'll watch the latest oil and fuel inventory reports in the API that kicks off ahead of the DOE report tomorrow. There's a key OPEC Plus meeting tomorrow as well. We'll have Ole back on the show tomorrow to discuss that. And in case the RBA didn't make itself clear in its statement overnight, we have the RBA's Governor Lowe out speaking tonight. Could get a bit more color on their rather dovish stance. And then in the background, a reminder that China's markets are closed all week for the Lunar New Year holiday as we enter the Year of the Tiger ahead of the Beijing Olympics to kick off this Friday. All right, that's a wrap for today. Let's see what happens next, and we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.